Michael Jordan, we talk about a tale of two attitudes. Do we ever have any attitudes? No. You know, sometimes when our children, we had to tell them that they needed to have an attitude adjustment. When what they wanted to do was not quite in line with what we thought was appropriate behavior. Of course, that never happened to us, especially as teenagers, that we needed to have attitude adjustments as well. But sometimes we need to have an attitude adjustment as an adult. Michael Jordan, he was cut from his high school basketball team. He could have said, "That's it, I'm finished. There's no point in me even trying anymore to play basketball." Is that what he did? Of course not. He was a 6-time NBA champion, 5-time NBA most valuable player, 10-time scoring champion, 3-time steals leader, 14-time NBA All-Star. He didn't just quit. He said, "Yep, I was cut, that's the end. There's no point in me trying to do more." Or how about J.K. Rowling? Anybody know what she was famous for? Harry Potter. Turned down by 12 publishers. Of course, they missed out on the opportunity to sell 450 million books. But did she say, "I've been turned down by 13, I've been turned down by 14, I'm not going to write anymore. It just isn't worth it." No, she kept working at it. Well, how about Elvis Presley? After a 1954 trip to the Grand Ole Opry, he was told to keep his day job, which he did for a little while, but continued what he really loved doing as far as singing. And of course, he's one of those rock stars that has made as much money dead as he has alive. His estate earned over $35 million last year. But he didn't quit because somebody said, "You can't do this, it's too hard." We know about those who were told by others who couldn't succeed but did it in spite of it. They kept right on going. But what about those who didn't have the perseverance and the drive to keep on going? What about those with an attitude of "can't"? I can't do it. How many of those do we remember? They just disappear. Sometimes the easy thing to do is to have an attitude of "can't." But when we have an attitude of "can't," don't we also have an attitude that God can't do something? What is possible for God to do? Everything. Sometimes we've got an attitude of "can't." Jesus had one simple question for his disciples: how can we meet these people's needs? Here we had a crowd that came around to him to hear him preach all day, sitting in the sunshine, listening, and they were hungry. Do we know people that are spiritually hungry? These were physically hungry. But how did the disciples approach this whole thing? They had lots of good reasons why they couldn't do it. Don't we sometimes have good reasons in our own minds why we can't do something? I was reading just yesterday, how many of you all have ever bowled? How many of you all look forward to a 7-10 split? Now, what's a 7-10 split? That's where those two pins on the back corners. It's almost impossible to make. In the more than 40 years that professional bowling has been on television, There have been four times it's been made. It is possible to do it. It's not easy, but it is possible. In fact, I was watching one fella who bolted, made it, and still lost the game. So he made the record books in one way and not in another. But the disciples, their first comment, we don't have enough money. It would take 8 months' wages, 200 denarii, working man. We just don't have the physical resources to be able to take care of it. It is beyond the realm of our possibility. Do we sometimes feel that way? We just cannot afford to do something. Now, it might be in our own personal life, we say, well, I don't have the resources to be able to do something. But what happens when you band together to do something? It's been said that a rope, well, it's true, a rope is made up of many small fibers all twisted together. Each fiber is weak, but when you put them together, it's very strong. Same thing with us. We as Southern Baptists, one of the things that we do, we cooperate with other churches nearby. We cooperate with the Eastern Baptist Association. They're located in Salisbury. There's about 40 churches that are involved in that. And basically, we make a contribution every quarter, 3% of our undesignated receipts, to help them with such things as ministry at Salisbury State University. We can't go, but our dollars can, to make it possible for somebody else. And other kinds of ministry activities to migrant workers and stuff that's done as far as at resort communities, this kind of thing. We also contribute 9% of our undesignated receipts to the Baptist Convention of Maryland and Delaware, of which part of that goes to the cooperative program, which helps fund missionaries and other types of things. Don't have enough money to do it. Then they say, well, we don't have enough resources. All we've got is these five small barley loaves and two small fish. Our kids' lunch. What can we do with that? In our eyes, not much. Or, you know, there's not enough money, there's not enough resources, there's just too many needs. There's too many mouths to feed. 5,000 hungry men, there's no way that they could be satisfied from a human perspective. But isn't that sometimes our problem in that we look at things from a human perspective? What can I do? Or what can we do? When we say, that's all we can do, we're the ones that are putting God in a box. God's bigger than any box that we can put him in. Because all things are possible with God. So many needs, so few of resources, we just can't afford it. We can't make it happen. Well, how did Jesus respond to that? Let's look again at that verse 10 and following to see what Jesus did. How did he address the disciples' attitude? Jesus said, have the people sit down. There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the five barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. There are several principles in this that we can draw from this miracle that we can apply today to move from I can't to God can. One of those, who was to get the credit for this? It has to be for God's glory. Are we, whatever we do, are we doing it for us or are we doing it for God? Does it matter if our name is on it? Or would I be just as happy to be anonymous? If I'm worried about my name being plastered on this chair that it was given by Jim Moore, then I'm doing it for the wrong reason. I remember years ago, and this to me seemed bizarre, but years ago, I was at a meeting in a black church up in Smyrna. And as you walked in the front door, in the vestibule, there was a chart on the wall with all the members' names and how much they had given. That was updated every week. Maybe it's a cultural thing, I don't know. And maybe the idea was to say, hey, look, Sister Sally, I can do better than that. Personally, as far as I'm concerned, the gift can remain anonymous. Just give God the glory for it. But if it's a cultural thing, so be it. Jesus didn't do it for show. He just did it, said, hey, there's a need. Let's make it happen. Psalm 127:1 says, unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. It's got to be for God's glory, not for ours in there. We do not need to build or to move into a building for us. If we do it, it needs to be, how can we minister and share the love of God? If we do it for any other reason, we're doing it for the wrong reason. It must be for God's glory, but also we need to expect great things from God. Do we sometimes figure, well, why bother? Jesus gave thanks before the miracle. There was no doubt in his mind that there was enough there. We confuse sometimes, I can't do something with God can't do something. Now there's a difference. God can do anything, but he can choose what to do and what not to do. Because if we say, well, gee, God, if you don't do what I want, then it's not going to be good. Mark 11:24, Jesus said, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. Like I mentioned last week, you know, if we're praying for rain, we better carry an umbrella. If we're not carrying an umbrella when we pray for rain, obviously we don't expect God to answer the prayer. It must be for God's glory. We need to expect great things from God because God can do more than we ever anticipate. Sometimes we don't ask enough of God. I remember talking to a fellow who had been approached as far as a donation for a charitable cause. And he said, the guy that came to me, he asked for $100. He knew I was wealthy, and he just insulted me. He didn't think that I had the desire to give more. If he had asked for $1,000, I would have given it. But since he only asked for $100, he didn't think much of what he was asking for. He didn't believe enough in what he was asking for, so why should I? We need to expect great things from God. We must be willing to think outside the box. Do we sometimes think outside the box? Andrew did, because at least he said, this kid has got a lunch. I don't know what you can do with it, but at least it's a starting point. That small portion couldn't do anything by itself, but God can do something miraculous with it. Do we see times in the Bible were people that were doing God's work, were thinking outside the box. How about using a slingshot against a giant? How about marching around a city and blowing a trumpet for the walls to fall down? How about a virgin giving birth? Ways that God thinks outside the box. Sometimes we think, well, if it doesn't work out this way, then it can't happen. God is not confined to a particular box. We don't need to confine God to a box. But also, we need to be like that kid who brought his lunch. We must be willing to sacrifice everything. How much can we give? The boy gave his whole lunch with no expectation of getting even a bite back. Most of the time we come back and say, yeah, I'll give some, but I want to make sure I keep some for me. Do we have examples in the Bible of people that were willing to give everything? How about Abraham? He had a child of the promise. You know, he'd had this fling with Hagar and had Ishmael, and that gave problems. The child of the promise, finally. And God says, all right, I want you to take and make a sacrifice. Your son, the child of the promise, are you willing to love me enough to give everything? And so he took him up on the mountain and was ready to slay him. And God said, nope, nope, just checking, seeing if you were willing. Or how about in 1 Kings where there's a widow that has got oil and just one meal left. And the prophet Elijah comes to her and says, can you feed me? She might have said, nope, out there, there's enough for me. There's not enough for you. And if it's choice between thee and me, it's going to be me. But what did she do? She gave the meal, and the oil flowed miraculously, more than she ever expected. Of course, the ultimate sacrifice, Jesus Christ. He was willing to give his life for us, willing to sacrifice everything. But also God multiplies our efforts. You know, sometimes if we just get the thing started, God is an effort multiplier. How many baskets of scraps did they have at the end? 12. That was more than they started with. And that was after 5,000 people had been fed. God multiplied miraculously. God multiplies our efforts as well, more than we ever expect. But we have to be willing for it to be for God's glory, not ours. We have to expect great things from God. We have to be willing to think outside the box. Sometimes we got hung up on that box and said, well, you know, I don't know whether God can work that way. God can work however way he wants to. Or sometimes we want to keep that little bit for ourselves and say, God, I'll give you everything but. And we forget that God multiplies our efforts. After struggling to develop a viable electric light bulb for months and months, Thomas Edison was interviewed by a young reporter who thought if Edison felt like a failure and he ought to just give up. Edison replied, young man, would I ever feel like a failure, and why ever give up? Now I know definitely over 9,000 different ways that an electric light bulb will not work. Success is almost in my grasp. And after 10,000 attempts, he invented the incandescent electric light bulb. But he didn't quit. if Edison showed that kind of drive to take away physical darkness, what can stop us with God's power to take away spiritual darkness? We don't have to be a whole big crowd to do it. We don't have to have overwhelming resources to do it. We just have to be willing to replace our can'ts with God can. God does the same thing with our own lives. We can't do much, but with God, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Sometimes we have the can'ts, but with God, He can. If your life is messed up, God can change it. If you got problems, there'll still be problems, but God can show you a way through those problems. You notice in the 23rd Psalm, when David wrote, "Yea, thou art with me through the valley of the shadow of death." He didn't say, "I'm with you as you make a detour." He's with us each step of the way. With God, He can do anything.